Well, no, okay, now it works. All right, so this is the center of the action right here.
Okay. You do that on Saturday mornings every other day.
I'm going to go get the copies of that.
Okay.
They have that for years. They have that for years.
Oh, my goodness. Okay. Happy New Year, everybody.
Happy New Year. That was my line.
That was your line? I stole that one from you.
Happy Valentine's Day?
Valentine's Day? That's a new one. Okay. So, do you all, I guess we should just call the meeting to order. Okay, we're going to call the meeting to order at 5:39 p.m. January 21st, 2011. First meeting of 2011 for the CACJS committee. Roll call.
Okay.
We'll start with Ms. Putman.
Putman.
DeFanos.
Rosenbaum.
Holland.
Kessel.
Miller.
Brown.
Turner.
Donovan. Ammons. And Weibel is also present. He stepped out. As far as an agenda, I really didn't prepare a typical layout agenda. I had sent an email out about what I thought would be a good idea for us as an objective to what we would like to accomplish as a committee this year. And some of those things included things we had talked about already, but we have not completely followed through on. Pius is grabbing the actual email so that we can look through that and see what those are. And I asked for folks to chime in and see if they felt like there was other things to be added to it or whatever. Was there anything that you all felt like we needed to do that was not on that? Ms. Putnam?
Phase 2, Part
2
of the
Mm-hmm.
legislative lobbying work, the subcommittee of Avery, Putman, Rosenbaum.
And what is that phase two? What would you consider phase two?
Well, we're in the first year of the 97th session of the General Assembly. When we met with my representative, Jacobson, a year ago, we were in the second year of the Legislative General Assembly, and it's not the propitious time to get stuff going. We were able to introduce the mission of the Citizens Advisory Committee to our state representative. She told us this will fly, this won't fly, but now that we're in the first year of the next session of the General Assembly, we might actually get a bill, be able to draft a bill. And we have of course, maybe I should wait till that part of the agenda rather than just.
Well, I actually think it clarifies if you need a moment, that's fine. But I think that I was curious when you mentioned it in the email, exactly what it would be, what the bill would look like. Is that something that the legislative committee would put together? Is that something you want all of us to partake in?
Well, there could be more than one bill. It's possible that a different member of the General Assembly, a representative or a senator, has a bill that's already in the works. There might be I think every session there might be a half dozen to a dozen bills that we either favor or disfavor. For example, last year this group voted to disfavor a piece of legislation that would penalize people for failure to respond to the summons. And I was, led in this thinking by Judge DeFanis, who says, I don't want to arrest people into the jury box. We don't want to send a negative message. Well, by the time our group, I took a position on that, it wasn't timely. A significant concern that we developed during the 96th General Assembly was to increase the kinds of lists from which the jury list can be compiled, and expanding it beyond the three: registered voters, licensed drivers, people who have disabilities or who have a state ID, but to draw on larger lists. For example, the various lists that the Department of Labor keeps, for people who are, say, filing for unemployment benefits. We talked about lists of maybe students, but adding lists so that we could get a broader broader groups of people to draw from. That was one piece of legislation that we discussed with Representative Jacobson last year. But by the time, you know, we had gotten ourselves together, it was in the tail end, the second year of the General Assembly, and I hope someone will correct me if I'm misspeaking. I think that only emergency bills are introduced in, and budget bills are introduced in year two of any given two-year session of the General Assembly. But now, here it is January of a brand new year, we could get something going. The other thing that Representative Jacobson urged us is to speak to your representative to get their most rapt attention. So some members of the advisory committee may have someone other than Representative Jacobson as their representative. Might have Chapin Rose, might have Jason Berrickman. She recommended going to the people who, because they are your constituents, because you are their constituents, you have the greatest pull with them. Also, she urged us to unite with well-recognized organizations such as the League of Women Voters, and if there was a piece of legislation that we would get behind, we were urged to make common cause with groups such as League of Women Voters, ACLU, law educators such as those at the College of Law, associations of defense attorneys. There's a group that my former county board colleague Tom Betts belongs to. I'm forgetting the name of it. Randy, there's an organization of defense attorneys. Or
criminal defense attorneys, but also just the State Bar Association.
Oh, and the State and the Bar Association, she urged us to make common cause with also. At present, we have a meeting on the last day of this month, January 31st, a Monday, with Representative Jacobson. We also need to meet with our Senator Frerichs.
So then that means that we would have to... What sort of, I guess that's what I was really thinking about with, for the committee. Time frames. I know last year we had a lot of wonderful ideas. We did get a lot accomplished last year. I think it was a great step. But I thought if we put time frames on things, mm-hmm. I thought it would really give us a push, give us some sort of framework to work within when we want something done. So, for instance, you mentioned that there's a year. Basically, we have 1 year to have bills introduced that may be of interest to this committee or whatever, but bills have a year. So I don't want to say let's give ourselves a year. I think we could clearly within, since we're only meeting once a month, I would have to say that the, what do you guys think? No later than March, we have something together, you know?
If I could just expand on that for a second. I think we're going to meet with Ms. Jacobson to figure out the kinds of bills that she thinks are coming from other legislators and things that she thinks has any plausible chance of passing.
Okay.
Some of the ideas we had were to amend the statute that outlines the things that are considered, such as driver's license and so on. But I think what we as a subcommittee want to do is to look at all the statutes surrounding jury instruction, think about things that we as a group may want to add or modify in some way to bring it back to this group.
Okay.
And so we're getting some input from the legislators, but my guess is within a month and a half, we as a small group will have some ideas of the potential changes in the law that perhaps the legislators think have a half chance of passing. So we could bring maybe some proposals to vote on next month or two.
I know. Also, last year, I don't think we were naive, but we put everything on the little table in front of us. Add to the stipends. The jurors are paid. Well, Naomi just said, okay, snowball in hell, goodbye. You know, I mean, some things just weren't going to work. And then, so what is plausible? Not much, but some things are. And also, deadline for introduction of new legislation, it comes real early. We have a real compressed time frame in which we can get anything done.
Okay. But you don't know, like, if that's March, if that's June.
Oh, I imagine it's in February.
For what?
The cutoff date for introducing new bills.
Well, I would start talking to people right now.
Yeah. We've got an appointment with Naomi on the 31st of January.
And so the idea is that she's looking over things that we may be able to amend to add some components of what would be in our interest. That I'm clear on that? Yes?
Mm-hmm.
Okay. So that would turn around pretty fast. So that was one of the things that I had the legislative proposal, the political team can expound on it, and that's what Jenny has just done. So that's one thing that I really think would be... I think it's good in two ways. One, if we can actually get something done, that's great. If we can get something in our favor as a committee. But, you know, some things we just have to try. I mean, even if we don't get what we want, it still shows that we're working and we're trying to get something done that we think is legitimate and is reasonable. So that's one thing that I thought was very important. And so we're looking at a time frame. You're saying that by the end of February. Is that what I'm hearing you saying, Jenny?
Well, do you know what the deadline is?
I'm not sure, but
it's soon.
It's soon. I can find out Monday because the Urbana, Champaign, and the county are meeting with legislators Monday afternoon, and I can find out then.
Judge Ponson,
let me make a phone call.
Okay.
I might be able to find them.
Thank you.
Okay.
Because what they do, if they know there's something there, they put up a shell bill, which is basically an empty bill, but with the big number, whatever, that they'll fill it in later.
Okay, so the other things, if you all could look at that, I'm looking at the first thing on there was radio ads and appearances. I had spoken with Mr. Pirtle again on another matter, and when I brought up this issue, there's something that they do at WBCP called Straight Talk Live that they do sometimes on Saturdays from 11 to noon, and it's been sort of sporadic, and he has pulled the entire program until it can be more consistent. So what I wanted to do was propose to the committee if it were possible for us to, if I were to go back to him and say that we had someone who could make a cycle of Saturdays, or we had several people who would be willing to come in and do radio appearances to help him on that program. So we may come in for 30 minutes maybe on a Saturday afternoon, early Saturday morning, but that we would have a team of folks that he could count on to be there to discuss issues about the importance of jury committee. The reason why I thought about it might be a good idea to have it on an ongoing basis is because even with the $900 or so that we have for an ad, that's not going to run very long, right? So I thought it was an opportunity for us to get information out about the committee and about jury selection service on a regular basis. So he was sort of open to that idea. As well as looking for a possible sponsor to sponsor the show or to sponsor one of us on the show, but also maybe sponsor the actual ad that we want to run. So all of it can be done right at WBCP. We can go in and say our things that we want to say and have the commercial run right there. But I wanted to see if we could get any sort of commitment from folks to do a sort of cycle of Saturdays, even if it's not every Saturday, maybe twice a month or something like that. What do you guys think about that?
You're talking about like going on some kind of a show to talk
on session. WBCP radio show in particular.
I don't see why we all just can't take a turn.
Aaron, do you mean that the subject every Saturday would be jury service?
Well, that wouldn't be the subject every Saturday. But what he said he wanted to do was to make sure that the show was consistent, right? So that people were hearing information that they don't normally hear on a regular basis. So that's when I brought up the issue of the committee. And he said that was something he'd be willing to talk to me about. I'm talking to you all about it to see. So if I go sit back down with him and say, okay, well, I have a team of 12 folks who say that each one of us can commit to 30 minutes on a Saturday morning to talk about the issues of the jury selection process and why it's important.
You know, if you expanded it to more than just juries, I think people, well, first off, I've never known a lawyer, and being one myself, I can say this, who didn't like to talk. So if you expanded it to more questions about the legal system or something like that, and had different participants from the legal system, it would expand the number of people and the scope of the program, because I think the jury, narrowing it down to the jury stuff, would be very narrow. I mean, you've got people who are elected officials, you have people who are appointed officials, you have those of us here. You know, you can expand the scope of it, and it may be, you know, people may call up, and this happens on Depending for Your Thoughts or any other show where you either don't know the answer or can't talk about it because it's a pending matter. There could be lots of reasons, but that doesn't necessarily mean it's a wasted effort or a wasted time. And I'm sure that you could get the state's attorney or us or, you know, other people in the system to talk about what they do in their
land
role.
Land of Lincoln,
you know. So if you expand the scope, it would make it something that could be more regular.
Okay.
Karen?
Yes.
For example, the show that Jim Turpin wasn't there. In his absence, another WDWS host presided over the appearance of, didn't Judge DeFalmas, he didn't make it that day, did they? Had someone else? You were there, and you and the day that you and Aaron appeared on Penny.
Yeah, that was Brian.
Okay. That there were if you had been on for 2 hours, the calls would have still been coming. There is an unending interest in the law, and when knowledgeable people or slightly, what do I want to say about the cachet of a certain personality? The people want to know about the law, and I don't think 30 minutes would be enough. I would at least an hour to get it, you know.
But again, it's finding the sponsor. I mean, the money is going to be the hard part. I mean, like I said, I think you can find people to fill it. I don't think that's difficult. And, you know, you've got experience in hosting programs. I'm sure there are other people at WPBPs. WBCP that also have experience. So really, you just need people to come in and talk. And I'm sure we can find people to fill that.
Is it that without a without a sponsor, it can't happen?
Well, no. It's a show that sometimes Mr. Pirtle and other people actually do. The sponsor part came in from the idea that we would have a radio ad running for an entire year, right? So the show itself doesn't need any sponsor. WB, the Straight Talk Live, is something that they do as a part of the show.
Okay.
But as far as the ad being able to be run as well, was something that we were thinking about a sponsor, or if we wanted our own show, something like that. You see what I mean?
Okay.
Yeah. Judge?
I got some information about introduction of bills. The House, I'm going to call back as the exact dates, but you're right, about the end of February. The problem with the House is they like to have the bills in by February 4th, so they can send them to the Legislative Reference Bureau to get them drafted. The Senate doesn't have that kind of a deadline to send bills to the Legislative Reference Bureau, but we're looking at probably the end of February. As I said, I'll get a call back in about 20 minutes with the exact dates.
I thought you said February 4th.
February 4th. The House would like to get the bills in.
Okay, we waited too long, man.
Well, I don't think so. You know, I think what a lot of legislators do is they say to the Legislative Reference Bureau, they say, I'd like a bill to say X. And what they do is they run the statute, do the amendments, they cross out, they do the italics for the new stuff. And so the legislator doesn't know how to do that. Well, I've been on committees for the ISBA and stuff that draft legislation. So, I mean, if we find a statute that says driver's license and blah, 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 I mean, all we have to do is just take that form, italicize or whatever, and give it to Naomi. We may not even have to go to the LRB.
Okay.
You know, if we've already put it in the proper format. So, I think we should aim for February 4th. But
you also have to make sure that the data is out there, too, and that it's in a way that it can be clean, who's got the data, and that sort of thing. I mean, it's not just saying, okay, good, we want these kind of people. Well, who has that list? And what would you have to go through to get that data? It's not just saying, well, we'd like to have this group of people. Well, who's got that list? Who's actually got the data that you can actually get? That may be a little more tricky.
So the committee, that's you, Jenny, it's Randy, and Patricia. Was that the three? Was the three of you?
Well, it is, and I don't, you know, if others want to join, I don't see any reason why not. If whoever has time and wants to jump on. We were just three people who, this is something we wanted to do.
Right. I'm just asking from the standpoint of if that's going to be if this is something that we can work on and get done, you guys have already been working it. I think we would just like to see if you put something together, we would just read over it or whatever and say, you know, we support it or whatever, additions or whatever, we, you know, critique it or whatever. I don't know how much critiquing I would do of something like that, but I just think that it would be something very positive if we can get that done. So that was just, again, going back to the agenda, this is just something that I was trying to lay out to sort of add a little more fire to us, to our seats here. So that was one thing, the WBCP piece. I will talk to Mr. Pirtle again and get even more clarity, but expanding the idea about the legal system and making it sort of like a legal corner or something like that we have where folks will come in. And if it happens to be one of us who don't know a whole lot about the legal system, then we could talk maybe more specifically about the committee. And if it happens to be Judge DeFantis or Randy or some of yourself, then you all can talk more specifically. And I'm sure WBCP would love to have
Joe Gordon from probation. Maybe he would want to talk, because people want to know what that means and what does it mean. So there are people that are behind, not necessarily in the front lines, but are behind the scenes, and they can answer questions that people wouldn't normally have a chance to ask.
Okay, yeah.
My contract says I go with you.
I got you.
Well, I have no contract. I can only go when you let me, so you can...
I think the bottom line was that he said point blank, as a listener, when you're sitting there listening to the show, you don't want to hear people just saying the same old thing that you already know or that you've been hearing over and over again. You want to hear something that you didn't know. You want some new information. You want something like that. So certainly the listening base, WBCP, is getting broader in a lot of different ways, becoming more diversified. But they would be very interested in learning more of the terminology and about the legal system and stuff like that.
And this would be a call-in show?
Yes, and it is a call-in show as well. And certainly it's reaching the targeted population of our committee. The other appearances, I did think that it would be good for us to do other pieces too, because even when we went on WDWS, if there's an assumption that the listeners of WDWS are more knowledgeable about the legal system and jury system, I quickly learned that that wasn't quite the case either. So any of these appearances, so I would be willing to put together, if Judge DeFantis and I are a tag team, maybe we could tag team up some other folks who would go together to radio appearances or something like that. I could hear Pius and Roger together.
What are you laughing at?
I'd pay to listen to that.
Randy and Roger.
Really?
What? No, we can Randy and Roger would be a little more interesting, you said? Okay. Pius and Bill. Would anybody speak up if Pius and Bill were on the show?
He's pretty quiet.
Okay, so I just thought about people going together and being able to talk about it, because sometimes you miss things, as you're talking as an individual that somebody else sitting there with you can add to the conversation. All right. BD, when we went to meet with the teachers
in Urbana,
we had talked about these pamphlets, and some of the other teachers over there were very, the teachers who were involved were open, and Roger has come prepared. He found some already, or made some?
No. We actually send everybody who's going to be on a penitentiary with their summons, and this is not the one that actually comes from the AOIC. These are actually, I printed off the website, it's a PDF file. A handbook for petit jurors, and basically what it does is describes what jury service is like in general. Again, these are produced by the Administrative Office of Illinois Courts, which is the administrative arm of the Illinois Supreme Court. And don't blame the folding on the AOIC, that's my folding, so I never could fold a map. But anyway, what they do is it just sets out the basics of what it means to be a juror, the kinds of cases, how they're chosen. And so it's a basic document that has, basic information. And we provide those with our pamphlets to those who are summoned for jury duty. So they have at least this information in addition to the, when they get in, as you guys saw, when you get into the jury assembly, the actual video.
So this is to people who get summoned, though?
Right, but I mean, it's actually on the Supreme Court website. It's a PDF file. Mm-hmm. You can take it, download it. In fact, I did. I have it. So it's available. It's common. It's not something that's hidden away or anything.
So I know we had discussed this before, and I don't know what the cost would be, but something that Andre Arrington pointed out comes to mind when he came to our committee meeting last year, that although Steve takes the children from Holy Cross to mock trials, they're still not reaching what we consider to be the target population of this committee. So we're talking about broadband access and stuff for people to be all over the city of Champaign-Urbana to have access to internet. Some folks still don't have access to internet.
Right.
So if there's a way for us to work with the Boys and Girls Club, the churches, if we have a document like this that we can run off copies, there's so many different programs and different ways that we can get them into their hands. Then it'll be sort of up to them to try to, for us to have some sort of, for them to read them and to know what's going on. And the only other thing I would say is, if when you looked over this, how consistent is this piece with, like, the new questionnaire that we put together? How does it parallel
this? This really just describes what jury service is like. It's a very most basic framework. It is not in any way, shape, or form tailored to how Champaign County does business. I wasn't saying that this satisfies everything. Mm-hmm. What I was trying to do is let you know that this is out there already, okay. And so that if we were going to do something that was specifically tailored, there was no reason to reinvent the wheel. If you wanted to tailor it to exactly how we do business in Champaign County, that's something that a completely different issue, or if we wanted frequently asked questions, which is not part of this, that's something different. I wasn't trying to say that it's that this takes care of it. I was just saying this is just the basic framework of what you're going to be doing, the different kinds of cases, that sort of thing.
I didn't mean it like that. I was just asking that you took the initiative to bring this, and so we knew that this was an important piece. So considering the stuff that we worked on like last year, what do you think would be missing from this that would be helpful to a person who doesn't understand this process?
Well, there's no mention of questionnaires in here. So this is basically once you're already summoned for jury duty. So that whole piece and the work that we did is not included. So that would be part of it. And they don't talk about the specifics of compensation. In other words, what actually we pay, because this is for the entire state and each county pays differently and has different, ways they compensate folks. That's not in there.
If we were going to do one of our own, it might be good to list some of the major employers that actually pay you to do your jury service. So if somebody works for one of those, they'll be a little less reluctant. They might not realize that they could get paid for it.
Or to have that play the role of that honor roll that we've talked about from time to time, where we recognize the public-spirited, civic-minded employers, which could also be in this down economy, just the people who are able to. I mean, you don't want to dump on people who are struggling, but I think it's appropriate to give praise to the companies that display that support.
Ken, I know you had a comment. Jenny, can I ask you to do something? Mm-hmm. Would you make a list of those employers?
Well, that would involve some research.
Okay.
I know Carl does. I know we do at the county.
U of I does.
I think Kraft does as well. But you may want to check on that to be sure. I'm not 100% sure. The other thing I was thinking is, once we identify those, once Jenny identifies those, it may not be a bad idea to say, you come this far, you pay folks to come and serve on juries, would you go a little farther? Would you help us get the word out by maybe sponsoring some radio ads or doing whatever? And the return on that would be, if we do a pamphlet, if we do something, they get listed as a sponsor, and it can be a very cheap, good public relations for a big company like Carl, who's probably spends thousands and thousands and thousands of dollars on advertising throughout the state.
A good kind of addition.
Or Kraft or some other company to say, okay, we're on the honor roll, it's important, and then when we're in the ad, you can even thank the sponsors. You know what I mean?
It's a great idea.
Yeah, I think it's a great idea too.
Brilliant, brilliant. Another public service announcement. No, another angle. Another angle.
I'm
brilliant.
I'm brilliant.
I can't. You want to say? I want you to.
That's a brilliant idea.
My next performance evaluation.
Ken was next, and then we got Patrick with that.
I was just going to ask: is this copyrighted, and can it be amended and reproduced?
I mean, it's on a PDF file. It's on the Supreme Court's website. So I'm not sure how you would define copyright. If you can download it to your computer for free.
Printed by the state of Illinois, therefore it's not copyrighted. It's a public document.
So that answers your question.
Cool. Patrick?
That was my question. So this actually came off the Illinois State Supreme Court site?
Yes. Okay,
so
yes, it did.
There. So this is the handbook.
Right. And actually, it's in color, you know, and the pictures and all that are much fancier, and the real one, I just printed out in black and white.
Is this something that we want to circulate in the
community? Well, this is why we bring it up. Roger brought it in for us to see. We were talking about our own pamphlet, right, creating one from the committee, and he said we shouldn't reinvent the wheel if there's something already that exists. So now that we have this, we were looking at how to maybe tailor it to what we found out in this committee, what things that we've learned. We've made some adjustments to the questionnaire. He said there's no mention of that in the pamphlet, compensation. So we were just talking about different things that we thought might be good additions, and maybe if everybody could spend some time over the next couple of weeks reading this and make some amendments, or not amendments, but if for instance, maybe there's something that we could take out of this and put something else in.
Or attach a piece of paper behind it, you know, a little thing. Frequently asked questions about Champaign County Jury Service, because then we can narrow it down. How much do I get paid? How long do I have to serve? You know, all that stuff that is, you know, how does it happen when you get a questionnaire first? And, you know, so you can put that stuff in there and kind of just make it an addendum to this, which would be a lot easier, I think, than trying to create one on your own.
Patrick?
Just briefly reading over this, you know, I think that this would be a good, this would be something good that should be circulated in the community. Now, I know you're talking about adding something to this, if this is the foundation of what a person is to expect when they come to when they petition to sit on the jury, then I think that's something that probably shouldn't be
changed
because this is the outline and how you should conduct yourself, what's your responsibilities, what to expect. Now, if we would say, okay.
Now, remember, this is only if you get summons.
Right. Okay.
I mean, it's available publicly, but you only make sure you get a copy if you're going to get a summons.
Right.
What we do is we actually, every year, or actually multiple times a year, we can request from the administrative office actual hard, you know, more, you know, it's on cardstock or whatever, the actual pamphlets themselves, and then they send them to us, and then we include them. So. I don't know that they do that for everyone. You have to request them, and there's a cost associated with producing them, so I'm sure they wouldn't just give them for us to distribute to the community, but that's another avenue we could always check, too, with the ALIC.
If you're talking about adding an attachment, talk about what the jury committee has done up to that. To this point, because first you want them to be able to process this, you know, and understand. Now, if you can't give it out to the community because of the resources, then it's with somebody. You say summarizing, going through some of these points here, headings and summarizing, because I'm still at the point, I'm still stuck in the point of where, how are we going to get the minority community to feel comfortable and understand their responsibility and understand that there's nothing that's preventing them from being a part of the jury service. Well, let me step back. If there's a problem with them not filling out the application or filling out the summons, if they're getting the summons and they're tossing it, that's one thing that we should be as a committee to say, okay, bringing more awareness to that. Now, if there's an issue with the summons not going to them, then that's another issue. You understand what I'm saying? That's a whole other issue that has to have some time to look into. So I'm thinking if we say it to the community, you know, if you're not registered to vote, or you don't have ID, or you don't have driver's license, then you're not in the pool. And if you're getting the summons, you know what they look like. Have you tossed them? You know, do you understand what your responsibility is? But I think that's, you know, I think that's where we at. Now, you know, Randy, like you've been a head public defender, put you on spot here for a minute. Like you've been a head public defender, and when you see a case, you say, okay, well, you want that type of representation, you want fair representation, within the jury pool, then how do you see the awareness to the community about, you know, why are we not showing up? You know, is it a multitude of things, or is it just a total responsibility that relies totally on the minority community, or are we part of that problem? And then you got something not going out to us, or something that's some kind of something that's preventing or hindering. You know, so I think that's something that just keeps, that just, you know, it's stuck in my mind. You know, because as I still talk to certain people, and I'm not saying this is broad, but as I still talk to certain people, you know, age group, older people, well, I'm not registered. I don't got no driver's license. I didn't vote, you know. Or you know, I don't want to go over there. I don't want to be sitting. You know, those, you know, that's just people that I, you know, have conversation with or talk to them about jury. And that's what I'm hearing. So, you know, what is, you know, I haven't heard anybody say, well, come in and told me they, you know, just, you know, or, you know, I haven't heard that problem of people coming and saying, I just had a terrible, in my experience, sitting on the jury, it was just so terrible. People were terrible. I mean, it was so racist, and it was just so prejudiced and discriminatory. It was just so much, you know, I haven't heard that. You know, so,
So I think the point that I hear you say repeatedly, even all year long, last year even, was that you want things to be as clear as possible for people to understand what their responsibilities, duties, and obligations are, right? And that's why this is the foundation of that. And so this is our first time looking at this. I was only raising the issue. It could be that we think this should just go out into the public just like this. We may be able to go to different venues, take this and just reproduce this document.
Right, on paper.
On paper.
Yeah, just photocopy paper.
And pass it out, just like this. I was only raising the issue. I'm not even suggesting that we change it. I'm just saying that if there's some other things that we thought were very pertinent to people when they first get it, if it makes a difference, like pay. I think pay is a tricky one. If you put $10 a day on here, I think other people might be like, oh, shit, that's what I ain't going, right, you know. But in other cases, if you do this honor roll, right, and you do show where people who do pay for you to go, they're like, oh, I can get paid to go. I don't have to miss work. Yeah, I'll make sure I do this. So it's a double-edged sword, I think, if you put mm-hmm. or whether or not we would want to add pay to something like this. But I do think the honor roll would be a wonderful addition to it because it is the basis for us to get support, sponsorship, mm-hmm. advertisement, mm-hmm. stuff like that. But I don't know if I would agree putting the actual pay on there because we already agreed that that's a major hindrance. So I don't know if we would say that to the public. So that's all that I was saying about that.
I wasn't, but I was more than ready, you know, since he's representing the defendant and he's representing a lot of minorities. Is what is it that he is seeing? You know, what is it that he's seeing from that point of view? Because I
don't know. I mean, if there aren't minorities there, I can't ask them why they're not there. So I don't know why people aren't showing up. I mean, it's what we've been talking about the last year. I know that our office had 5 trials this week. And of the 5 trials, in one of, you know, you bring 30 people in, and then 12 make it to the jury. And on one of them, there were, some African Americans, there were 4 African Americans in the pool, and 2 got on the jury.
I had a trial last week, 14 in the jury box, 4 were African Americans. In the jury box.
Would you say that again, please?
14 jurors, 2 alternates, 12 jurors. The jury was composed of 4 African Americans.
And the trial that Randy was talking about, there were 2, from what I was told, 2 African Americans, someone of Hispanic descent, and someone of Asian descent. So.
And you never know. I mean, it could be the time of the year. It could be the week that they come in. There could be, you know, different because of professions, farmers, and whatnot. There were a couple trials where there were no African Americans in the pool of 30. I mean, it's hit or miss.
In that same week, I had a jury trial. The first one, I had no African Americans at all in the jury. The second one, I had 4 out there, and they all made it to the jury box. So
it's called being random. It's random.
Let me say this. If what I've heard from them in the beginning when we first met was that if there was an issue with minorities not filling out the summons, now if somebody has that data information or somebody has that information or actually captured that information and put that information into a statistic to show that this is what the problem is. This is part of the problem. Or is it problem. If that's the problem, I think for you know us as a committee is that we're trying to increase more minorities, and we need, you know, we should be focusing some on that, saying, hey, these are these numbers and these are the representation and this is what's going on. So we are not.
Well, one of the things that's on the list, I don't know if you have the email that I sent out to everybody. One of the things is data showing the impact of all white juries on trials in Champaign County, right? If possible. Now I know that yours is a little bit different what you're raising, but the issue of data is what I'm trying to move into, so that we could discuss that for a minute and the importance of it.
I have a little bit of data. I asked our computer person for Treadwell to give me an updated list of what the racial breakdown was of the questionnaires that we've gotten. Now, this is only of those individuals who indicated a race. I'm sure there are some that didn't. We don't really know because we're still, the data's all combined together from the old questionnaire plus the new one, okay? But of the 791 people who indicated a race, 64 were African American, 681 were Caucasian, 13 were Hispanic, and 33 were Asian. That's a total of 791. Which means the percentage of African Americans was almost 8%, 7.96. Caucasians were 84.7%, Hispanics 1.62%, and Asians 4.1%, which is not exactly representative of what the public is at large, but it's not totally far away from it either.
You said that was a total of 791.
Correct. And that's a very small sample, obviously. We're going to get a lot more of those in as time goes on, but I felt it was, since this committee was the thrust behind putting that question on the questionnaire, you would want to know the responses. And I only have an accrued form, and I have something I'll put together for you, but we'll get more data every one of these meetings. I will definitely be reporting to you what the what our results are.
Okay. We got three in a row. I think Bill, Joan, then we'll come to Ken so they can get in.
Do you know how many? So 791 indicate race. Do you know out of how many? I mean, how many didn't indicate race?
No, because again, this was kind of, that's why I didn't put it all together in a nice format, because I don't know when the cutoff from the old version for the new. The total number in this sampling that I have is 1,572. Of those, 768 were unknown, meaning that they either got the questionnaire and did not indicate a race, or it was an old questionnaire where the race question wasn't on there at all.
Is there a way to change your coding method so that we can find that out?
Well, as time goes on, we're going to obviously be only considering the, we'll only have the ones that have the question on there. And then we can obviously count the total number of questionnaires we sent out and then look at the ones that we actually get back in. So, yes, there is a way to get that information, but I wanted to make it clearer. Once it'll be much clearer once we only are dealing with the questionnaires that have that race question on them.
And Roger, before we move on to you two, just quickly, what, in your mind, when do you think the old stuff will be out of the system?
I'm not really sure. My guess is it's probably a couple more months, and that'll also give us a much better representation. Right now, this time of year, a lot of our older questionnaires get, or older data gets removed from the system, and we end up sending out a lot of questionnaires. In fact, we had several staff members this week working on sending out new questionnaires. So my guess is in the next month or two, we're going to get a lot of questionnaires in, which will give us a much better picture, a much clearer picture of what the racial breakdown is of those who are responding to the questionnaire. And at that point, we can look at how many people aren't answering the question.
Joe?
Well, I'm thinking that 8% is lower than the percentage of African Americans in the population of Champaign County. That's what, about 11 or 12%.
Actually, 9.5% are of 18 or older, and that's based on the data that Paula used the last time. That's what I pulled out when I looked at this. So we're about 1.5%. And again, you have to remember this is a very small sample. So drawing any conclusions from this is probably not advisable too much, but we're down about 1.5% from the African Americans. We're up about 4.4% on Caucasians. We're down 1.28 on Hispanics and 3% on Asian folks.
Well, what I was going to say is that when you're in the courtroom, you see a tremendous variation in the population of the juries. I mean, sometimes you'll see all white juries one after another, and then you'll see other juries where African Americans are well represented.
Mm-hmm. I think that's what Judge DeFinis was saying earlier. Mm-hmm. Okay. Bill, you went first, right? Okay, mm-hmm. Ken.
Yes. Is anyone here familiar with the numbers or the population of Vermillion County versus Champaign County? Are those the numbers? Because this is what I would like to add. Five members of the Turner household in Danville, sixth county, my nephew. My brother was the only one that was never summoned or asked. You guys, my nephew was here, what, back in, mm-hmm. Was it?
Thanksgiving time.
Is that where it was? Okay, so he was asked or whatever it is. My dad served on a jury. My mom served on a jury. My sister served in November on an assault case in Vermillion County. Of course, you guys know that I was asked several times. So I don't know if we're contemplating or looking at numbers and how they're picked and how individuals are picked, but except for my brother, all of us have been asked, and three of us have served. Except my sister was, and she was extremely excited about it. So, but I mean, I would like to ask, is the system that's used from Texas, is that the same system they use there, or you can choose your system from anywhere?
It's the same. It's like software. You can get it from anywhere.
Okay.
They may have a completely different system over there. I have no idea. I've never dealt with their. If they have a court administrator, I've never dealt with them, so I don't really know. And they're in a completely separate circuit from ours.
Okay.
We're in the Sixth Circuit.
They have jury trials four times a year.
Over there?
Yep.
Okay.
Four times a year. It's like they do in the rural counties. Plus, it's about half the size of Champaign County.
Okay.
I don't know if the four times a year skews the the percentage, but it is a smaller county.
Right. It does raise
it. But I'm just saying that all of us have been asked, except for my brother, all of us have been asked, and three of us have served.
Yeah, and I think the point, though, that I get from it is that when you're talking about what are the numbers, the density of the population, if that changes the frequency that you get called. So certainly it's half the size of Champaign, so that could increase it. But I guess one question that I have is there a county in the United States that's represented or that's adequately represented? Like, okay, if you got 12% African American, do you get 12% African American in a jury? Or is there a county that's above that? I don't know if my question is being clear, but I'm just trying to see if there's some place that we could look at and maybe see what software they have, or how are they producing, or how is this county producing more African American or minority representation? You understand what I'm saying, Roger?
I understand what your question is. The only person I know that might know the answer to that would be Paula Hannaford Agler, since she has a much more countrywide scope than what we do here. She would be the only person that I would know, and clearly any one of us can shoot her an email and ask her. Okay. And my guess is that it would probably depend on the region of the country, and I think it's a much more the question is much better focused, I think, on the population above 18 in Champaign County and what we're getting,
mm-hmm.
you know what I mean, as far as the return on the questionnaires. But we can always learn from some other county, and I think that's a good point that you make, but that's the number that I'm shooting for.
Patrick was next, then Jenny, and I think
Barbara.
You want to ask Ken a question? Yeah. If this is germane to this, let's see what her question is.
I just wanted to know if they have questionnaires in Vermont account, or if you just give us some. I'm not sure.
But on the way home, I can call her and ask her. And I can call my nephew.
They would know whether they got it was a two-step thing or a one-step thing. I think that's really, they may not know what it's called. Every county does it differently.
And one thing that would be interesting, though, too, because I came from an all-black neighborhood in Danville, and it would be interesting maybe if some of my neighbors have been chosen, and I'm not sure of that. But it's awful strange. It's just my family. All of us had, except for my brother, once again, had been asked to serve. So I don't know. Maybe I should play the lottery or something.
Does that answer your question, Barbara? Okay. Patrick.
So, Roger, so the summons that you guys are sending out, okay, now, from the beginning, you guys had mentioned that the summons that there was a problem with minorities filling out the summons.
No, we just want to make sure that the questionnaires that we send out are being filled out by everyone.
Okay. So
we don't know whether we won't know. This is the only data that we have that's going to tell us whether or not what the racial background is of those who are filling out the questionnaires. Is this data right here? This is just what we just started collecting, because in the previous times our questionnaire didn't ask what a person's race was.
Okay, so when I heard at the beginning that the issue was that minorities were not returning or were not filling out the questionnaires.
That was a potential. We were trying to look at what might be causing that. And that was, we said that might be a possibility, but we had no data to make sure. So that's one of the reasons why this committee chose to put the racial question on the questionnaire, so that we could then find out.
So now it's on there, and now so we can better track it now.
Exactly.
Okay. So then, I guess, how are we, if that percentage is 8%?
Right, just on the small sample that we've got so far.
On the small sample, then how are we, because my belief is that there's a population of minority that are not in the pool based upon some issues.
Right.
Now that's not to say, I'm just talking about those issues. Now, if they're not getting the summons, that's a different issue.
Correct.
But I'm talking about, okay, well, what is, what I'm trying to say, okay, what is, you know, what is the role and how do we get the message to the community that, okay, to understand when they see these summons or these questionnaires to fill them out. To be, you know, to get more, to be more involved. That, I think, to me is how I can, I guess, immediately, short term, and bring maybe long term, see some results of where you're seeing more fair representation on.
I think that what you're pointing out is that this is not a problem that's going to be solved by putting a question on the back of the questionnaire. This problem is, or this issue, has lots of different issues. First off, are we missing folks because they don't have the ID and the or a driver's license or are a registered voter? And that's something that we're going to address with the legislative part, see if we can get up to it, get more data from a different list. That will add people. Also about the outreach, about explaining what jury service is like, to take away that fear or that uncertainty or that perception that it's not important or what have you. That's another part of it. There's not one solution that's going to, we can do one thing and suddenly everything's going to work. It's a lot of different things that we're trying to get at. This is the only thing that I know of so far where the data shows us exactly what the race is of the individuals who are filling out the questionnaire. And they're self-reporting, which means that they're telling us what their race is, which is a much more accurate method of determining it than basing it on an observation by somebody else.
Jenny, Jenny was next. Then we come to Ken. I got to take this.
Okay, well, since the chair is stepped away. I have a question. It's a little bit personal, but I've been just itching to ask this. The reply should be interested to everyone. I received a summons in October, completed the questionnaire, and was given the date of October 12th to report to jury duty. And shortly thereafter, I received a letter from the clerk of the circuit court telling me that the case had been decided out of court, and so there was no need for me to be present. Will my name go back in to the hopper, or did they say, we're done with her, throw her out?
It was, yeah, my guess is it was a special jury, which means that we had a case that's anticipated to last longer than 1 week. So then we call in, because our jurors are normally called in for 1 week at a time, but if we have a case where they can't get all the testimony in or it's a very complicated case that may take longer, we send out a special questionnaire to get those folks. I believe that your name goes back in, but then you would probably be back in the pool, which means that you would get another questionnaire and another, but your name is not eliminated from the pool.
By the way, the questionnaire was very familiar to me. It didn't look like it was uniquely constituted for any specific case.
Right, it's not. I mean, okay. The questions are exactly the same. It's the summons is the, you're summoned in for a specific purpose. Because we don't think that, you know, we tell people on the summons, you're summoned for a week, so that they know going in that that's the length of time they're going to have to serve. So if it's something different than that, then we feel that we need to let them know that their obligation is going to be longer. That's why we do a special jury.
Before I relinquish the floor, I think this is first rate that you're sending us out. This is really...
Yeah, we let people know. I was talking to Barbara. It may be that, in fact, I'm almost positive, we actually just hand them to the folks when they get in so that they have it to take home with them during their, you know, after they get orientation from Judge Ladd, and then they have this to take home.
It's dense reading, but not...
Right, and the format is much nicer in the actual ones we get from the LIC, but I thought it was important everybody see it.
Thank you very much.
So, Ken is going to comment, and then I want us to move, because we only have about 20 minutes left.
I'm good. Go keep moving.
You good? Okay. I wanted to connect the sort of personal piece with the data piece. There was a lady who called me about 2 weeks ago. Her son was going through a situation, and it's African-American male and all-white jury, and so she's uneasy about all of that. And there was an interesting request to see if this committee could write a letter of some sort to see if it was to show maybe some, I don't know, I don't even know how to word it, but she was supposed to come today and she was going to speak to the committee. She didn't come today. But the I shared with her that I didn't think that we had any sort of, and that the chair had any sort of leeway to write such a letter to maybe say that this is biased or something like that, that the jury was biased. I didn't think that I had the authority to do anything like that or that this committee could. I don't know. But I would have felt more comfortable if there was some data out here that said that African Americans are 7 times likely to get convicted, found guilty in a trial with all white jury than others. Then I felt like that was something that if it was public information that this committee could say, hey, this is what we found. This is the information that we found. So that's what got me thinking about data. And Patrick talks about data all the time, how important it could possibly be. And so this questionnaire, the changes in the questionnaire, as a foundation, I think, for us to start to really start to understand how race impacts the judicial system and be able to track it. So there was some other data I think Patrick was asking about before, other than just the questionnaire, but just like, I think, but this is what the League of Women Voters, and I think the snapshot of the court watching that Beckett's class does already is to try to show what the racial makeup is of the jury. But the only way that, the only self-disclosing piece is the piece that we have on the questionnaire. So trying to create some data or to pull together some data seems to be very elusive and try to actually have something that we could produce. But she did request that. She did want to come and speak. She didn't make it today. I don't know what happened, but I was expecting her. Maybe she'll come back at a later meeting. So I just wanted to let you know that that was happening. These are some of the kind of requests that I got already, and I didn't feel very comfortable with it. And then we didn't meet over the holidays, so I didn't really know exactly what to share with her.
Yeah.
That, you know, her concern is what we talked about on the radio, is that the people trust the system. I said I had one trial last week, where I had 4 African-Americans out of 14 in the jury box. The first trial was an African-American defendant, all-white jury. They acquitted him of a very serious offense within a couple of hours. So it's the trust issue. That's the issue that we have. This lady doesn't trust the system.
Mm-hmm.
But you may have every right to feel that. But and you're right, once we get more data, we will be able to determine the racial makeup of juries.
So basically, I'll come to you right here, Pius, Patrick, this is something that we've heard argued before. Some of the main people who make an issue of an all-white jury still turn around and say they still think they can get a fair trial, or that their defendant can still get a fair trial. It's just still an issue. And I guess my question is, does it go beyond trust, right? Because if you show me a case where an all-white jury acquits an African-American of an African-American male of a very serious crime, it says, see, okay, you can get a fair trial. Is that what it really means? Maybe that person got a fair trial. It doesn't mean that everybody else who was in that situation got a fair trial, right? I mean, you know what I mean? So it still has it kind of, it doesn't create the level of trust I think people are looking for just to say, okay, there's this situation where this person got off, you know, but it doesn't, but then somebody else can say, well, here's 10 African-American males who didn't get off, and this is 10 reasons why they should have got off, right? So, I mean, I think the point is well taken, but I don't know if trust is all. I mean, I think there's some other situations and cases where people have seen things happen that says that there's some very racist things that are taking place involved in the cases. Pius, and then I think Patrick.
Well, I'll just continue that. I think you're correct, but part of that is maybe just a societal thing, too. Not just the courts, other places, too. You think, well, if I got racism out the street, I'm going to have it in court, too.
Right.
And also, go back to what you just talked about, those last 2 trials, that would still exist even if you had, say, more than African Americans than you expect to sign up for jury duty because of the random selection.
Mm-hmm.
You could still have that situation. You know, even if the jury by race was what we'd like to have, you know, with the optimum, you're still going to have that.
Yeah, true. That's true. And, I mean, And again, I don't want us to, Patrick, you talked about this before. We want to send a message of the importance of serving and the power of serving, but not to be irresponsible at the same time and say, okay, well, we got an all-black jury. This person is just automatically going to be. I'm certainly not trying to send a message that way either. I mean, if it's a black defendant and they've done something heinous and the evidence is there, I think an all-black jury have found them guilty, right? You know, so sometimes the concept, it gets repeated, and then that seems to sort of be the subconscious thought that we're looking to get black people on the jury so we can get people acquitted, right? You see what I mean? And that's, I think that's unfair and irresponsible. Patrick.
Well, I guess since, you know, I guess the most important thing, you know, the most important thing to me is how do we, you know, from the information that I've, the information that has been shared, what is the next steps of us saying, okay, what are we going to plan or put together to show the community? And I'll use this analogy. When, you know, with the movie Glory, I don't know if anyone had ever saw that, but that was, with Morgan Freeman, that was the most important thing that he could say, you know, that, you know, to be involved in your fight for freedom is, you know, is the most important thing that you could possibly do. So how can we say, okay, hey, you know, minority community, here is what we have been seeing. Here's what we've been working on, you know, because, and I don't know, I mean.
No, I think your point is well taken. How do you get the, it's more than just the data, and it's what Roger was saying. It's more than just the data, the questionnaire. It's the message. It's the culture that we're trying to change. So these are some of the things that we want to talk about at this first meeting. We were talking about how to get things done and to make our appearance and presence stronger so that we can get that message out.
So because I know we talked initially about, okay, are we going to do something in video in the courthouse? But I thought, you know, you think about, well, you know, the churches, and how do you, you know, get within the churches, because that's a difficult task to have to, you know, for a pastor to allow you to come in for 5 to 10 minutes and make that announcement. Or do you have the person at the church that does the announcement make that announcement? But we have to continue, I think the message to me is we have to continue with the push saying, hey, if this is how you get involved, and this is the reason why you get involved, this is the importance, and these are the things that you can do to be involved.
So we talked about this. I think you came in a few minutes late, and we talked about the first thing we talked about. One of the first things was having a commitment to go to BCP and be on part of Straight Talk Live. And I got to talk with Pert a little bit more about that, but that was one of the first things that we discussed about making sure that whether it's a legal corner, but something that we continue to get that message out on a continual basis. So we are, there is a focal point. We do have to make sure that we continue doing
that. Okay, well, that's, you know, I mean, that's one avenue. You know, are we creative enough to create something to where we can, as a community, say, hey, you know, is it worth us doing something, or individually doing something, or doing something collectively, where we are continuing to put that message, putting that message out there. You know, these are the three things, this is the problem. I mean, we have to be able to, you know, to get that message out there. I think that,
especially within the church, because that is so immense important that we can even have something where the churches could, where we could have these maybe some of these numbers here, or maybe some of these something to where we have that where that message is coming to them, and they're being able to take it upon themselves to want to participate in this.
Right.
You know.
Was it Ken and then Jenny?
Yeah. A question for the judge. In your opinion, have there been white defendants that have been unjustly accused and prosecuted and sent to prison by all white juries when you may have felt that the individual was innocent? Or is that
all I can deal with is what comes in my courtroom, the charging decisions and all that is up to the state. There have been times, the closest I can say is I'll listen to the evidence and I'll realize it's a very close case. And if it was a bench trial, I'd try to think how I would rule. And I really haven't had a situation, African-American defendant, Caucasian defendant, where I've really questioned the jury's verdict, whether it's acquittal or conviction, because I can see how they can come to that decision absent any racial factoring. There's close cases, a lot of close cases, and a lot of times I'll go back to the jurors and I'll say, this was a tough case, but the decision that you rendered is the right one. I don't care whether it was an acquittal or a conviction. This is what the 12 of you determined. So, but, you know, to say that I've seen some, if I see someone who's convicted and the evidence isn't there, it's my job to stop them. That's the judge's job. I either grant a directed verdict or I correct it at the conclusion in a motion for a new trial. So if I think it's a complete miscarriage of justice, then it's the job of the judge to pull the plug on that.
So you basically haven't seen basically all white juries and say, have complete bias toward a black defendant and just say, well, I'm just going to convict him regardless.
Again, I'm not in the jury, I'm not in the jury room either. I mean, yes, we have all white juries that convict African-American defendants. We have African-American defendants that are acquitted by all white juries. We have this last jury that I had with the four African-Americans, although we're not supposed to, they weren't able to reach a verdict, the jury was. And I'm not supposed to know what the count was, but the court officer knew. And it was 6-6, six were guilty and six were acquittal. And that definitely meant that the African-Americans weren't just sitting in the corner saying, I'm not going to vote guilty. They had several of the other jurors both ways. But I don't know what goes on the jury. But if I see a miscarriage of justice, then it's my job to stop.
There's something called a judgment notwithstanding the verdict. J&OB might have heard it's a notwithstanding verdicto, but basically that means that no reasonable jury could possibly render the verdict that was rendered in this case, and if someone makes a motion for a judgment notwithstanding, or the judge feels that it's a miscarriage of justice, they take care of it.
Okay, so my point taken. So then he'd be the stopgap.
Right.
So if I'm
exactly
on trial,
right,
I have 12 white jurors, and someone tries to pull the password on me, when my lawyer has presented this information, then it seems like a lot of the power obviously does rest with you.
There are 850 trial judges in the state of Illinois. Some of them are good, some of them are bad, some of them are racist, some of them aren't. It's a human system. So you can't guarantee that if you're trying a case in some other county, you're going to have a judge that knows what he or she's doing. So, yeah, it's the job of the judge to make sure that it's fair.
Okay, so do you issue? Are you the head? I'm sorry. I mean, are you the top dog? Excuse my language. So do you have the authority? Do you have the authority to reprimand other judges if you see things that may be questionable? Or have you ever had to do that? Or
we discussed some things, but I've not seen the judges that are doing anything that's. They may make a mistake as far as the decision is concerned. But as far as jury trials are concerned, that's up to the individual judge. I don't see what goes on in other courtrooms. If I get any feedback, I mean, I might address it. And we've set up a program now in the state of Illinois to to deal with problem judges. And I'm a... I'd like to have me stuck in your chamber and say, we got a problem. We had a training session in Springfield. But, you know, the judiciary is trying to work through that. We understand that it's not just jurors or prosecutors or defense attorneys. You've got some judges that have problems, too. So we're trying.
Thank you.
Jenny, then Brian.
Because it's getting late, I want to do my best to answer the important question that Patrick has asked. It's a question that we have answered the last time we met and the time before that and the time before that. It's a multiple phase. We're going to go to the churches. Yes, we're going to go on the radio. Yes, we have written excellent public service announcements. We have educational pieces. We just need to do it. And I hope that we can get a motion to approve these minutes. I want to read something, which this is what I remember from last month's minutes. Dovenar advocated immediate expenditure of funds on hand to begin airing the ads written in accordance by Patrick Thompson, approved by the committee. You know, the sooner a check could be written to the management, the sooner the Thompson PSA informed by Aaron could be placed in playing rotation. Dolanar urged Ammons, drawn his background as radio station left air shifter, to ensure that Thompson and other PSAs are aired on WEF. So let's do it. The wonderful orientation video that stars Judge Heidi Ladd, we're going to remake that with people like Patricia Avery and Patrick reading the parts. And we're going to distribute that at churches and at the Boys and Girls Club and wherever it can be put in use. We're going to have the honor roll where I think I'll go first to the Chamber of Commerce and see maybe they already know who grants this. But I think that we do things on multiple fronts, and I think we've been saying this pretty much, we've been repeating the same themes for the last year. I recognize it took us time to understand the matters, but I think we just need to do it.
That's why I want us to have time frames on that. Brian?
You sort of bring up the point about going to the visitor Bana High School, and we met with several of the teachers there who teach American government, I think they call it there. And in talking, kind of the head teacher there was Michael Pollack, and he was very receptive. In discussing some of the things, he wanted to know some of the basic kind of issues in Champaign County, and he was most interested in the information produced by the court watching study, and asked that if, like, he said a three-page summary of the court watching study could be produced. That's something that they could circulate in the classes and teach in the classrooms, and use that as a teaching as a prompt to look at the numbers of the census, where African Americans represent 12% in Champaign County, they represent 6% of the pool according to the study, and this for them could be a jumping off point for discussion as Pollack saw it. So I was going to ask you, Joan, if you could possibly come up with three pages. That would be great.
To make a connection there, because the curriculum is what I asked, what I wrote down, curriculum proposals for middle and high school, because when Patricia and I and Brian met with City of Champaign, and then when we met with Urbana, they all talked about this sort of sporadic thing that might happen once a month, once a year, that type of thing. But as an ex-school teacher, and a great writer and everything, I thought maybe a combination of Joan with the court watching summary and maybe some ideas from a curriculum standpoint by you, Barbara, might produce something that we could give to them that could be something unique. What do you think?
So writing a curriculum?
Well, I don't think a curriculum. I think that would be a bit
a course plan.
And that's
much.
What the teachers, the educators themselves.
Right, right.
That's their job.
But I just thought some ideas by you serving on the committee and doing some court watching, what would be some things that you thought would be important to relate real life experience, not sort of a cookie cutter type of thing that may be coming, but something to sort of veggie back onto what she is that already going to put it back here.
Oh, not piggyback.
Right,
no, piggyback.
So, you see what I mean?
Are you talking about high school or grade school or both?
Middle and high school.
And something accessible for students, and this is true, this is for Russian students, something accessible for the students.
Right.
You know, something,
Something that
So maybe think about it and just see, tell me what you think. Great. All right, y'all, we got about 5 minutes, and I wanted to just touch on this last piece before we go. This was just dates, possible dates that we could put as in with this. When could teachers come to
tour? Whatever they want. Basically,
What about a mock trial?
Same thing. Earlier this year, I did a mock trial for the business law class at Urbana High School. I got a call today from Parkland College. They're going to have 13 international students come for a tour of the courthouse. Basically, all they have to do is call me, and I look to make sure we have a courtroom available. I arrange a tour, and if they wanted to do a mock trial, I could arrange to have that happen as well. So it's really not up. It's really there's no real restriction because I can't ever guarantee that we're going to have space. It's a more of a space issue than a time issue. I always make sure that I talk to them, and I usually conduct the tours myself, which means that these poor people are bored to death and never want to come back, but they seem to enjoy it, and it's been a rewarding experience the last few years for Urbana High School anyway. But it's open to anybody who wants to do that.
So that's something we can include in that summary?
Mm-hmm.
Okay, so that would be
y'all
great.
Y'all have my email address. All you have to do is give that to them. And if there's a teacher in the community who wants to have his or her class come to the courthouse for a tour or for a mock trial or what have you, all they have to do is let me know.
Okay, all right. Pat?
So you do mock trials at the courthouse?
As much as we possibly can because it's the court.
Is it
ambiance?
Is it still possible that we can use the courthouse and maybe have some folks sit in the jury, all white jury, and maybe videotape maybe 10 seconds or something, and then maybe have someone afterwards make a comment towards need to for minorities to get in the jury pool or to either be registered to vote, have state ID or driver's license.
Yeah,
that's not what you pull out.
Well, it's not a problem. First off, the custodian of the courthouse is the sheriff. And the sheriff is always going to want to do this during the day because it's when his court security staff is there. And so that's the main thing. Obviously doing some sort of PSA or taping there, I'm sure that we can work something out. It would depend on scheduling and making sure that the sheriff was okay with it.
Now, would like to do this. And could we get 12 all white juries? Sit in that jury?
You mean just 12 people to act as jurors in the? Oh, I'm sure that we can ask for volunteers. We have people here.
Volunteers too.
I'm sure that's something that's possible to do, but. I think we need to just work out a script, make sure that we're all on board with it, and then we can do whatever we want to do for PSA.
I'll think about it some more and send an email and run about a group.
Joan has a parting comment.
Doesn't Steve Beckett he runs some mock trials at the courthouse?
He does it once a year for Holy Cross. We do it one time. He's done it every year for the last, I don't know how many, but several. And I've been a part of it every time.
But don't the law students do them?
The law students participate in trial advocacy course as part of their school, and the culmination of that is for them to actually participate in a trial. It is a mock trial at the courthouse, and they go through it with the jurors and the entire thing. But that's part of their schoolwork. It's not some sort of community outreach. It's actually part of their classwork.
Did it take a little time?
Yes.
It wouldn't be something that you could just drop in.
Wait. Hear ye. Order in the meeting.
Wait a minute.
You got to be in order, too. We got a question over here, Roger, about that. Is that open to the public, even that mock trial, the classroom thing?
I don't think so, because it's after hours, for one thing. So I'm not sure that the public can come in. It's basically just narrowed down to the students who are in that class. And what they do is that because they're new at this, they actually videotape it so that they can watch it themselves and kind of critique themselves. So, but that would be a question better addressed to Mr. Beckett.
Motion to approve the minutes of November 5th, 2010 of the Citizens Advisory Committee.
So moved.
Second.
I'd just like you to know that we have some of the names of the educators. It's Yolanda Graham from Unit 4 in Champaign, Michael Pollock, Mark Foley, and Chris Bedford from Unit 116, and I'll add those names.
So motion to approve the minutes with the amendments of the names, the changes, and the additions of the names.
Yes.
Seconded by Mr. Holland. All in favor?
Aye.
Ayes have it. All right. So, motion to adjourn the meeting.
Move.
So, move. Second. All in favor? Aye. Meeting is adjourned. What was it again now? What
did you say? Come on.
Come on.
Come on.